I'm Greg Johnson. Welcome to Countercurrents Radio. We are doing another of our Saturday streams. Countercurrents Radio is now on Saturday, and we're doing the writer's block on Sunday. That's with Nick Julvey. So Countercurrents is doing a special argument clinic. And the reason we're doing this is it's practical, it's helpful, it's useful to know how to respond to arguments. And I have several guests lined up, and they are all very good at arguing. They like to argue, especially our issues. And the issue that we're going to deal with today is, how do you respond to being called a racist, which is the worst thing in the world today? How do you respond to being called a racist? Before we go into that, though, I want to remind everybody that if you would like to send a question, comment, or donation to Countercurrents, the only way you can do that with a credit card is to go to entropystream.live/countercurrents. You can hit the green button, leave an offline paid chat for us, and we will get to that in the course of today's stream. We will thank you, and we will comment on your question or your remarks. And we would like to hear from folks in the audience about how you deal with the charge of racism. We're going to put our heads together. We're going to put our big brains together and come up with some useful strategies. One thing I would like to recommend that everyone look at as well is an article by Aylmer Wedgwood at Countercurrents about what to say when you're accused of being a racist. I think this is a very helpful article. So if you would like to take a look at that, that would be great. We will be joined now by two guests. First of all, I want to introduce Richard Hauck. Rich, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on again.
And my other guest is Thomas Steuben, who was on last week and has written a number of things at Countercurrents. Welcome back, Thomas.
Hey, welcome back.
And we are going to be joined in maybe 15, 20 minutes by Gadius Maximus, who is one of our tireless promoters, a moderator, a commentator, just a fan who gets the word out. And he also has some great responses for the racism charge, the racism slur. So what I want to do, first of all, is just read a few passages from this Wedgwood article while the crowd gathers. And then we'll start analyzing it. And folks, if you're out there, share this stream. This is a very practical stream because we're all being charged with this. I would say that the worst thing today is being called a racist. People will literally say that you deserve to die if you're a racist. You deserve to die if you're accused of being a racist. There's an idea that's going around that racists have no rights, that if you are accused of using a racist slur, even if you didn't use it, that is basically, in the minds of Black people, justification for murder. It's a very, very serious and dangerous charge. The entire political system is premised that on the idea that racism is the worst possible thing. We can't have borders because of racism. We can't have standards because of racism. We can't have STEM and law and anything that's hard because racism. We basically can't have Western civilization because of racism. And of course, they're not so blatant about that just yet. They want to have all the good stuff without racism. But the trouble is that the way that the left now is currently defining racism, they're basically just defining things like 2 + 2 = 4 as racism, having standards as racism, telling the truth is racism, and on and on and on. So it's a very serious charge. How do we rebut it? And I want to look at some passages from this Wedgwood article. Folks, share the stream. Let's get some more people in here before we dig into this issue. But the Wedgwood article has some great lines. I like to think of the racism concept as the one ring of Sauron into which our dark lords have poured their cruelty, malice, and will to dominate our culture. White supremacy, Nazism, and xenophobia are similar, but they are all subordinate to the one word to rule them all, racism. As long as the term racism carries such moral weight, we will never win. It must therefore be a top priority to dismantle it. I completely agree with that. This is not a trivial task, however, so we have to carefully consider our response to it. I will now suggest five coping strategies listed in reverse order of effectiveness. One, I'm not a racist because XYZ. Two, yes, I am a racist, but racism is good. Three, you, the left, are the real racists. Four, anti-racist is just a code word for anti-white or anti-white racism. And five, you cite race realist research on IQ and crime. And so I guess the first question that we can just talk about here is, why is it not a good idea to say I'm not a racist because of X, Y, and Z? Rich, do you have some thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that, well, first of all, denying it doesn't make any difference, because once you've been called a racist, you've sort of hit a trigger in these people's mind, and they've already decided you're a racist. It's not really up for debate. It's like the old Supreme Court standard for like indecency. And it's like, oh, we know, when we see it, you know, if it's explicit content. And they're like, yeah, you don't get to debate this. I know racism when I see it. I don't not care to hear about your justification. I don't care how your best friend's black. I don't care how your sister married a black kid and you love your half black nephews. I don't care that your favorite football player is black. They don't care. Like, none of it ever works, for one. And by kind of going into this, you know, little shtick about how you're not racist, you're really giving into their frame entirely and saying, oh yeah, I agree, racism is bad, and that's why I'm totally not a racist. And it's tricky, and this is a good topic to have a whole show on, because there are some things that are legitimately maybe actually not racist, and some things probably are. You know, it's like, if there was any group of people coming into the country, if there was a white group of people coming into the country and 75% of them were on welfare and they had five times the violent crime rate as the white people that were already living here, and they were just generally hostile to be around, I wouldn't want them into the country. I wouldn't say, ah, sure, they're violent and they cost a lot of welfare and they vote for everything that I'm against, but whatever, let them in because they're white. Like, I wouldn't adopt that position, you know? So This idea that, like, I don't want immigrants here just because they're all brown isn't, you know, it teases out some of these nuances, because it's not just because they're brown. That might be part of it, but there are other things too. And you can kind of do these counterfactuals of, like, if there was this group of white people and they acted like this, would I want them here? Well, of course not. So you get, it's easy to get drawn into that, the idea of I'm not racist because actually my principles are a little bit beyond just strictly skin color.
Right. As soon as you do that, you are basically granting them the assumption that it's a horrible thing.
That's the thing.
Worst possible thing to be a racist.
That's the thing. So you kind of take that off the table, even if you want to use it later. And that's, we shouldn't be doing that, because even if, you know, I've argued before, what if my argument against all these people being here was, I just don't like to look at them. They're fine, but I don't like to look at them, and they can't have white kids, and I don't like their music. That's fine too, you know? Mm-hmm. And it takes that off the table, which is also important, you know, because if you adopt this idea of racism, you lose any preference about, like you said, any standards. You can't appeal to any sort of aestheticism. I don't like the art these people create, and they all happen to be whatever, you know, I don't care. It's like, you kind of get just caught in, you, like the article, you kind of start getting into their web when you go down that line.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people who are sort of conservative, and here's the big problem. The word racism is being used now as a very effective weapon because everyone's so afraid of it. Of course, people are going to keep using it for more and more stuff. They're going to attack more and more targets with this. And a large number of the targets really aren't racist. They're not remotely racist. They don't have any racial identity. They don't have any racial consciousness. They're just basically on the wrong side of an argument with a shit lib. And they are naturally incensed when somebody accuses them of being a bad person and it's not even true. And they're inevitably going to defend themselves by saying, I'm not a racist because X, Y, and Z. And we just have to accept that because they aren't. They're not racists. It's not how we would respond to it. But if you really aren't a racist and somebody accuses you of being a racist, I honestly think it's fine for you to say, no, I'm not. I'm offended at that. I'm for X, Y, and Z. Because it's the truth. And one of the things that is happening because racism is such a powerful concept is it's being used more and more frequently and more unjustly. And so you're going to get a large number of people who are just going to be kicking back at that. They will take their own side when they're accused of being heinous monsters. And I think it's fine. It's fine for them to do that if it's the truth. What I really object to, though, is people who are legit racists or certainly on the borderline or certainly have, certainly think race is important. Let's just say they think race is important, but they want to deny that that's the truth about them. I think that's foolish because they are reinforcing the value of this taboo that's being used against them. I'm talking too much, though. Let's bring in Thomas. Thomas, do you have some thoughts on the response, I'm not a racist because of X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, so for all these responses, and especially for this one, it depends on the context and what the target is. Are you trying to convince the accuser that you're not racist, an audience, or are you just trying to really not, or just kind of like diffuse the situation? For some of the other options, also have to ask, who is this for? Are you trying to, is this like a friend attacking you or is it an employer? So you have to look at the power dynamic and also who you're arguing against. They're usually, like nowadays, liberals never argue in good faith. Even if they want to, they can't because they're frankly have drank too much Kool-Aid. At this point, we're arguing with people who might as well be schizophrenic outside of Walmart screeching because they're high. But for this particular one, I think a good idea for this is for normal people who aren't racist like us or whatever, or race realist is the term I use, is to ask, okay, if this is racist, what's the end result? What else is racist? Like earlier, Greg, you said, because of this stuff, we can't even have Western civilization. They're kind of going mask off now, so I'd encourage them to take the mask off more. They're very hysterical. And just ask, okay, what else do you think is racist? What else would be racist by that standard? Let's apply kind of like the case law you created or the standard. Everything is racist. Everything has to be destroyed. Do you or do you not want that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's important. We do have to bring into our thinking, basically evaluate who's the audience here. Most, let's just call them shit libs because that's what they are. It's a beautiful word. It's a beautiful word for an ugly thing. Most shit libs do not argue in good faith and they're not persuadable. They're not rational. They're religious enthusiasts, religious fanatics who feel like they can score cheap points by accusing you of the latest sin, which is racism. And you're not going to be able to change their minds most of the time. However, you can, if there's an audience, sometimes persuade them. You might not persuade them entirely, but if you put up a good defense, that's important. Even if you just, blurt out something spirited but not a particularly good argument, that's still important for the normies to see. It's important to see resistance of any form, but a good response can change the minds of persuadables in the audience. And that's what most online debate really has to be understood as. When you're debating these people on Twitter or something like that, you're not changing the minds of the people you're going back and forth with, the blue and white checks on Twitter. You might be changing the minds of some of the lurkers. And And that's a good thing. However, if it's a situation where there's a quasi-legal context where you could be losing your job or something like that, or being accused practically of thought crime, you have to, of course, evaluate your response very, very differently. You might say, I'm going to plead the fifth on that. I want to have legal counsel present, something like that. In the context of being in an organization, I think looking at Vox Day's book, Social Justice Warriors Always Lie, is really very good in dealing with these kinds of attacks. And he basically says, you know, admit nothing, apologize for nothing, demand that every jot and tittle of company policy be followed to the letter, and make this very, very hard for them to do it. So, in one context, you might say, yeah, so what? In another context, that would be basically signing your own death warrant or basically signing your own resignation in an institution. So you got that, those kinds of contextual issues are really quite valid, definitely. Rich, do you have some more thoughts on this?
I actually read that Vox Day book some years ago, and when you're saying about how, you know, kind of deny it or, ignore it, you know, one thing I was thinking while thinking about accusations of racism is something, you know, from Jonathan Bowden about how it just, you know, it doesn't matter. We're stepping over all of this stuff. And I think that's in my own life in accusations of racism. And I've gotten quite a few, like, in real life. Mm-hmm. I would just be like, yeah, look, I don't even care if you think it's racist. Let's talk about whatever it is you actually want to talk about. I've had people tell me that, in school that, I read this article you wrote, it's really racist. And it's like, yeah, I don't care that you think it's racist. Like, what exactly is your problem with it? And, you know, let's talk about it. Or let's get to what you're actually trying to get at. And if it's a deal where, I'll tell you a couple funny stories. There was after people in law school found out I had a bunch of writings and things out there. Some of them read them and watched some interviews with me. And there's this one guy that I didn't even know, came up to me in the cafe. I was getting lunch. And he was like, I searched you online and found a lot of articles and things you've wrote in your Twitter, and you're really pretty racist. And I like grabbed my coffee and said, that's interesting. I don't even know who you are. And then just took my stuff and, you know, walked away. And he was like really upset about it. And some people saw it and kind of like really liked the interaction, even people who weren't totally on my side because of how goofy this guy looked. And had another instance at a party, and somebody kind of the same thing. She was friendlier about it. She's like, hey, I read some of your stuff and it's like, you know, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty racist. And I said, well, you know, maybe, but it was the race mixing article, the advertising one,
right,
that they had read. And, you know, she was like saying how it's, why don't I just let people, if they want to race mix, just let them be, why write about it? I'm like, well, everything in there is true. I mean, all the statistics are true. All the outcomes are true. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're really not the type to just let, if you just want me to let them be race mixers and not write about it, why don't you just let me be a writer and not complain about it? You know, what are you getting at here?
Why should I be the tolerant one and you not?
Yeah.
It's not a bad response when somebody says your article is very racist is to say, well, maybe, but is there anything false about it?
Yeah, I would. That's what I would take a lot
argument.
I would say, yeah, maybe I am a racist, but that I don't think this. I've had people too in other context of, you know, kind of going back to the immigration thing or just other issues or. You know, you're a racist. Well, maybe, but I don't even think that's important. Even if I accepted their frame of racism, which now just means like disliking non-white people for any reason. It used to have, I had a couple classes in undergrad that dealt a lot with racism. One was the whole class just about the studies of racism and stereotypes and whatnot. And one thing I noticed that was really interesting, I wanted to bring up on this, is like in the 70s and 80s, the way that researchers dealing with racism, so-called racism, defined it is radically different. It used to be like they were looking for people who had a sort of unreasonable or unrational dislike of other races. And at some point that changed, I think around in the mid-90s, and it's definitely different now. Now the academic definition of racism and the way these studies are done is that anybody who dislikes non-whites for any reason at all. And they removed this language. Like, I looked up a couple of the studies that were referenced in a textbook that were from the 70s and 80s. I looked up and I was kind of shocked to find that they allowed sort of this wiggle room, as in, if you had a legitimate reason, if you had a rational reason for not liking these people, they didn't really consider you a racist. So if you were like, you know, I don't like the Afghans in the USA because 75% of them are on welfare, you know, they would say, okay, that's not really racist because you have a legitimate reason that isn't based strictly on race for not liking these people. You would presumably, like I said earlier, dislike any group of people. If it was the Irish who were coming here and using 75% welfare and doing gang rapes, you would probably not want Irish in the country either. But that's totally gone away now in the academic landscape of what racism means. Now it's just like anybody who dislikes a non-white person for absolutely any reason. And that's a really important kind of change in the frame of this whole thing, I think.
Right. Well, but it's not even that, because it doesn't even have to involve disliking people. Doing anything that upsets non-white people, advantages non-white people, arresting non-white people for being high on drugs and passing $20 bills is now racism. Any unhappy interaction with the law enforcement system that a Black or Magic American suffers is now racism. If they're not happy with your service in the restaurant, it's racism. And so at a certain point, there are no criteria. And that is really why I think, you know, responding, I'm not a racist because of X, Y, and Z is less and less effective, because there are really no criteria at all anymore for being called a racist. If you're just a white person who gets in the way of a Black on a crime spree, that's enough to be a racist now. So, at a certain point, you just have to say we're engaged in almost a category mistake when somebody calls you a racist. To think that being called a racist is applying a term that has a distinct meaning and that there are necessary and sufficient conditions for being categorized as a racist is ascribing entirely too much rationality to the whole thing. Now it's gone beyond that. It's simply an expression of hatred against white people. And it's simply a club. It's simply a weapon, a verbal weapon. And when somebody takes out a knife and points it at your gut, you don't respond with an argument. That's foolishness. You respond appropriately. You take a knife to a knife fight and a gun to a gun fight. And you don't take arguments when it's not an argument anymore, when it's just an attempt to basically dehumanize you as a prelude to destroying you. Thomas, do you want to hop in on this?
Yeah, so I think it's kind of a lost cause of that. It's like, especially since they've conflated the you're a nasty racist as you just don't like them because of how they look versus having reasons. So it's not going to work out that way. So I think you just have to look, regardless what path you're taking with this charge, you just have to act very professional, never lose your cool. And it's kind of like the rules for online debate apply to real life too. Whoever gets mad first loses. So if you can trigger them in doing something that makes them look bad, do that. Don't try to do all this fancy semantic Semitic semantics, basically. The language has been twisted, almost being unrecognizable at this point.
I do think in the Wedgwood article, he talks about the second response, which is, yes, I'm a racist, but racism is good. We're kind of edging towards that in a way. And I do think that in certain contexts, that can be very effective, right? Yeah, maybe it's racist, but is it wrong? Or yes, my fear of Afghans is racist, but that will protect me and my children from harm. And that's an important thing to do, certainly in some contexts, because part of the enemy propaganda here is to insinuate the idea that racism is unconditionally bad. Yeah, if something is unconditionally bad, it's the summum malum, right? There's no circumstances under which this can be tolerated, under which it can be rational, under which it can be good. Well, that's basically to demonize it. And then if they apply that word to you, they're demonizing you. And one of the things we have to do is demonize racism. And so in certain contexts, yeah, it would be appropriate to say, yeah, maybe it's racist, but it's not wrong. Or yeah, I have a deep fear of these dark-skinned foreigners swarming across the border, and that protects me. That protects me. I had this amusing exchange with this guy in Hungary who thought he was, you know, he's probably by Hungarian standards very liberal, and he thinks he's very liberal. And I told him, I was on the tram once in Budapest, and I sort of sat down and I realized it was sort of surrounded by this family. And they were all extremely loud and they were just yelling at one another like I wasn't even there. And I felt really uncomfortable. And he just said, "Gypsies." and then he said, "You must understand, it is not racist to notice that gypsies are stupid and obnoxious. This knowledge protects us." And I thought this is funny. And it's, you know, here's a guy just saying this to a stranger, right? Almost a stranger. We don't have that level of freedom in America to say such naive based things, really, without fear of pushback. But this was just his attitude as a pretty liberal Hungarian, that there are some kinds of knowledge that protects us from bad people. And that's one of the things, of course, that's being stigmatized in America today, in Western Europe, is racism. But if you can basically say, you know, diversity, well, is there ever too much diversity? Again, they try and make diversity into an absolute unconditional good. And if you get people asking the question or pondering the question, well, can there ever be too much diversity? Because if there's too much diversity, then it's not always a good thing. Can there be too much openness to strangers? Can there be too little xenophobia, too little racism? If you can get people admitting that there really is the possibility of being too open, too quote-unquote anti-racist, then that's practically winning the war. And so I do think that in some contexts, yeah, just the response, yeah, I may be racist, but is it wrong? Or yes, but these attitudes protect us. These are good things. And that's a hugely, hugely useful kind of argument to make. Rich, do you have any thoughts on this? Just, you know, admitting it and saying, yeah, but it's a good thing.
Yes, I've kind of written about this in a couple contexts. And one of the things that I wrote about and said was dealing with the articles that came out some years ago at this point. But there was a study and it showed babies that are like even 3 months old prefer looking at faces of their own race. And it was like all these headlines. It was even on, I think there was a big Time article and I had this little baby in a crib and it was like, "Is your baby a racist?" And it was very interesting because they were trying to figure out how, you know, a 6-month-old or younger could have already become a racist. And it was like, well, obviously these are what they call racism is a highly sensitive and developed like in-group preference that people evolve to have, and that you know, and then when you get older, you combine that with pattern recognition, and you have racism. So you have this in-group preference that goes towards your own survival, and then you recognize certain traits among certain groups, and you develop these heuristics, and now they call it racism. And that's really, like, scientifically, all it is, if you kind of look at the evolutionary psychology of it, or how these heuristics develop as we age. That's it. That's the whole thing of racism, if you want to talk about it in kind of those terms. And neither are a bad thing. You know, pattern there was also an article I cited in this particular writing, which said that, you know, pattern recognition was a sign of higher intelligence. And it kind of goes into that as well. And the article also had this caveat of like, well, but also be careful because you can end up racist if you recognize too many patterns of a certain variety. And so sometimes, you know, depending on the context, when people are like, you're a racist, or, you know, you just don't like, if their definition of racist is, I just don't like these brown people. Okay, fine. Yeah, I guess that you're right that I don't like these brown people. If they are accusing me of having an in-group preference and the ability to recognize patterns that are behaviors among groups, yes to both charges. I have a strong in-group preference. There's those studies about amygdala and threat activation. You know, your threat detector's going off in your brain when you see people from amount to foreign tribes. It's kind of weird to talk about it in you know, current year, because you can't go anywhere without seeing foreign tribes, but
right.
It still happens. You know, when I'm at the mall and there's like a pack of Somalis coming around, I'm a little bit, I can just feel it. I can just feel the tenseness. I can feel my like heart rate jump up a little bit compared to if it's a group of white high schoolers, you know?
Right.
So there is some, if they want to refer to racism colloquially as this, pattern recognition and in-group preference, I don't really see a big problem with saying, yeah, I guess. Okay, yeah, I do have that pattern recognition. I do have that heuristic that this group of people is more violent than that group of people, and I need to watch my bag closer around group A than group B. I guess, sure, why not?
Yeah, I have an essay called In Defense of Prejudice, which talks about basically pattern recognition, induction. What is being stigmatized by people now as prejudice and racism is simply intelligence. Going through life with your eyes opening and making inductive generalizations based on experience. And so to be perfectly anti-racist is basically to be the kind of person who never sees the forest, they just see individual trees. It's to be kind of a drooling idiot, basically. And that's obviously you can't in a civilized, serious society with things like science and technology and law, basically uphold the standard of being a drooling idiot who can't draw conclusions from experience. That is just penalizing intelligence at its root. Inductive generalization. Thomas, let's bring you in on this.
Sure. So the way I look at this argument is that a good technique would probably be very Thucydidean, that this is all about power, not justice. Because you always do the whole justice thing and, oh, that's morally bad. It's all about power. And at the end of the day, if we don't have racial consciousness of some type or another, it becomes a twisted version of game theory. So for those who don't know about game theory, it can get very complicated, but the simplest form is that two people have to decide, are they going to cooperate or compete? And there's four different results. And basically, if one side cooperates and the other side competes, the guy who cooperates gets completely steamrolled. They have the lowest outcome you could get. And if you keep playing this game, you keep trying to cooperate, be, play nice. I'm not racist. You're steamrolled. And the other one, who is ironically racist, will destroy everything. So at some point you have to say, hey, I'm going to have in-group preference because other people are having in-group preference. I guess that makes me racist or racial or race, have racial consciousness. Because if I don't, I become a punching bag. I become the GOP. The other side takes everything. Yeah. And so if you want to play nice. But hey, I will, if you guys play me, if you play to keep every single time, I'm going to play to keep too. That's an evolutionary thing. And you guys have been doing this forever and ever. So if you want to change that, that'd be on them to change that. But they can't. They're here to only conquer, only take. They never want to compromise in good faith. So we almost have no choice but to be racial.
Yeah, I make this argument. I've made it in a number of places, but I make it in my my lecture and my essay, White Identity Politics, Inevitable, Necessary, Moral. Because it is necessary if you exist in a multicultural society where you have tribes working together as groups to get stuff, and you, as the white majority, are a colorblind individualist, they will take away everything. It's analogous to playing poker and giving everybody else at the table a wild card, namely the race card, the identity card, and not having it yourself. You could have the biggest stack of chips, but the more you play, every time you play another round with those asymmetric rules, you lose more, and eventually you will lose everything unless you start playing the race card too. And so if we're not to be destroyed, we have to start doing this. And that's why they stigmatize racism. They stigmatize racism because it is the one thing that will save us. And it is, and as long as we believe in this stigma, it will disadvantage us systematically. This is how we've lost control of our societies, basically. So Gadius is here. Let me welcome Gadius to the stream. Hey there. Can you hear us?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Sorry to show up on colored people time, you know, but actually I had to work today. You know, somebody has to work to pay for the taxes for the Iron Dome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's very important to all of us to keep that Iron Dome in place.
Yeah, what kind of person would I be if I didn't do everything I could to help our greatest ally? But anyways, I heard you guys are racist.
Yeah, we are. I think we're coming to grips with that fact. This is almost okay. Like an encounter group now. So
all right, well, I'm in the right place then.
Yeah, exactly. Racists Anonymous. Anyway, the third point that Wedgwood talks about, the third response is you are the real racist. I think we basically all can agree that you're the real racist is a very lame response. Well, for one thing, it leaves the taboo of racism untouched. And this is why Republicans always lose. They always accept the taboos of their enemies. They always accept their enemies' frame. And then they try and show that, no, they're the real anti-racists. It never works. They just get beaten up, and then they get beaten up some more, and they retreat some more, and they retreat some more. But anyway, what are your thoughts, guys, on Dems are the real racists? Is there any context in which that's actually a good argument, maybe?
Go ahead.
Okay. I actually could give the devil their due on that one, because if you think about it, the way they condescend and like talk down to minorities, like they're these poor little babies, I think you could make an argument that, you know, that is, it's treating them less than. I mean, for some reason they're, you know, it's a good thing to do that, you know, for obvious reasons, because,
well, it breaks up. Yeah. If you can take aside the minorities and point out the condescension and double standards and stuff like that and break up their coalition, that's good. That's good political hardball. Yeah. Go ahead. I agree with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, when, you know, it's something we like to talk about conservatives on, you know, Democrats are the real racists. It's Dinesh D'Souza has made an entire career out of this, right? You know, but there is something to that. Like, I would be offended. Like, I'd be offended if I was talked down to constantly. Like, I was this poor little baby that needed to be taken care of, and only the liberals or the Democrats will look out for me or whatever. So there is something to that. But yeah, I mean, they're not really racist in the sense of, you know, they dislike, they actually think they're doing good, but they're obviously hurting more than they're helping. So that's basically how I would defend that.
What do you think, Thomas? Are there contexts in which Dems are the real racist is a useful argument?
Actually, yes, I'm going to be a little contrarian here, but it has to be very, very specialized. First of all, the definition that the left has now for racism is power plus prejudice, which is silly because if you look at it, they have all the power and they have all the prejudice. For example, if someone's trying to get you fired from a job or harassed at school or whatever, or publicly shamed, they have power, you don't. Like, white people don't really have power in this country unless you can't count, you know, the dear fellow whites who aren't really white. They just like to badmouth us. But very rarely do I see, except for maybe a few WASPs running around Ivy Leagues, anyone with any real power. So anyone who is trying to attack you on this is by definition from a place of power. And two, prejudice. They're extremely prejudiced because if you look at this, they assume that any disparity in outcome has to come from either an implicit bias or ancient racism from the 1800s or something else, or the system is baked into the system and there's no responsibility. It's always whitey's fault, never blackie's. That is by definition prejudice because it is a fanatical loyalty to an a priori assumption. However, this should not be used, like the whole simpering thing I'm just so over with. The demon KKK rats, that needs to stop. However, it could be useful to do either trigger the other side into having basically an autistic meltdown. Like, for example, winning a debate, it's not just convincing the other side, it's convincing people watching it. So this would trigger them. If you do, in some places, it would probably trigger a response. They would melt down. They wouldn't know how to respond. And you would convince people that, hey, not like this whole hokey-dokey, Dems are the real racists, but actually, no, black people are out to get us. Not just like, you know, hokey-dokey, but no, they're trying to genocide us. And two, it might be useful to follow up after that with people who are red pillable and be like, hey, look, this is part of our program. When I say they're the real racists, I mean they're more like trying to, like, you know, exterminate us. So in a few very select situations, it could be useful, but it cannot be done with this whimpering GOP attitude.
Yeah, that's well said. What about you, Rich? Thoughts on Dems are the real racist?
I don't think it's... I come from such a weird background. Like, I used to think that meant that, like, Democrats were the real racist, as in they were just anti-white. And it took me a long time to realize that it was this, this really weird kind of, no, actually, we love black people more sort of argument. So I don't think it's very useful as it's used in the mainstream. I think if you want to point out to somebody who's there that the only people who you can, like, legally be racist against, if you want to use the term, is white people. I had an interesting interaction one time with somebody who was, again, being accused of racism. And it was this person who, like, spent extra money to live in the whitest part of town, even though they could have lived a neighborhood over and had the same size apartment for like a quarter of the price, and their parents sent them to a private school and they never worked with or lived around blacks. And they, you know, they were telling me I'm a racist for my writings or whatever. And basically the where I went with it was that at least I'm honest, unlike you who lives your life in a way that's actually far more, you know, quote unquote racist than I ever have. You don't even know where the bad parts of town are. And I've spent a lot of time in them, and, you know, I didn't get sent to a private school, and I don't pay $2,500 a month for an apartment with, you know, a gated parking garage like you do because you're so afraid of blacks. And I was like, the way you live, you spend a lot of money to not have to ever see blacks. Like, that's arguably much more racist than the way I live my life writing about that I don't like them at the mall or the gas station in sincerity. And that was like really, that put the people watching this kind of this conversation and the person I was having it with really on their heels. And they were like, you know, holy shit. I was basically, you know, said, hey, you spend thousands. You hate black people so much. You spend thousands of dollars a month so you never have to see one of them. And that was pretty powerful in that context. And I think, like Thomas said, it's real specific context related. If you want to hit somebody with that, you know, maybe if you want to point out that the only people you can actually discriminate against are whites in any sort of context, especially legally, you know, you can. But as far as trying to argue that, I've seen the GOP argue that like the welfare programs keep blacks locked in poverty and that sort of thing. And I guess, I suppose it could be true, but you know, I don't really care whether it is or not. And I just don't see it being a good, really practical, not a good practical argument. And I don't see where the end game of that goes. Like, let's say the Democrats were actually racist. And maybe even by accident, maybe the policies that they were using that they thought were helping black people were actually hurting them. Then what? So then blacks just vote GOP and then the problems are solved anyway. It's like we still have to deal with all these blacks somehow, and that it doesn't really get to the heart of any of the issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is well said. I am going to run through some of our DLive donations. We do take DLive tokens. We take diamonds, lemons, ninjaginis, ninjets even. And if you'd like to donate those, send them our way. It helps out. It helps us keep Countercurrents operating. It keeps the signal going out to you. Nick Gilvey has donated one diamond. Thank you very much. Racism is a Trotskyite slur against normal whites. This is true. A philosopher has donated three lemons, two ice creams, and one diamond. Thank you very much. Board Troll, one lemon. Nick Gilvey, another diamond. I have a gold-plated N-word pass from Snoop Dogg. Okay. I'd like to borrow that sometime, maybe. One thing that cracks me up is this story that I saw. I think it was linked at Amran, or maybe I saw it on social media, about some guy, I think some high school, maybe a grade school kid, black, in Texas, was selling N-word passes to his friends. I thought this was very, very amusing. And it's the kind of cucky behavior that they get to rent seek off. But this is actually rather enterprising of the lad. Old Man Yinzer donates one ice cream, thin red line, one ninjagini. Thank you very much. And says 14, philosopher, one diamond, and another diamond, and another diamond, and another diamond. Keep the Iron Dome up, bigots. And the Thin Red Line has donated one ice cream, philosopher, another diamond, and three lemons, and one diamond, and Azator, a diamond. Dems are the real transphobes, Republicans in 2021. This is true. Let's go to the fourth response that the Wedgwood article talks about, which is anti-racist is a code word for anti-white or anti-white racism. I do think that that is an important argument. I think the mantra was extremely important. The whole Bugs group, the mantra people way back when, you know, a decade ago, they were some of the first people who were organizing to go out and make memes viral and engage in swarms on comment threads and in forums and get their talking points out there. And it was very effective. And the idea that anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white, it rips the mask off. It shows that, yes, indeed, the way the current system is set up, we actually don't have any problem with racism in America or identity politics in America, as long as they are not white racism and white identity politics. The GOP panders to every identity group except white people. The Democrats pander to every identity group except white people. White people can't take their own sides in politics. They can't think of themselves as members of a group unless it's to take blame for the failures of others. And to just point out that double standard has been an enormous achievement, and it's shifted a lot of people's thinking, because once you hear about it and then you go through life with that template, you see it everywhere. You see that being anti-racist is not really against racism. It's simply against white people taking their own side in politics or in interpersonal relationships. So, Rich, what are your thoughts on the mantra, the anti-racism is a code word for anti-white approach?
I think it's really helpful, and I think it's really opened up a lot of people's minds to this idea of like anti-whiteism, and that some things aren't exactly how they seem. Like racism, like you said, racism isn't really about trying to right wrongs or, you know, redress past grievances. It's just being used as a way to extort and abuse white people. And I think it just does a really nice job at doing that. It's short and simple and doesn't take a lot to understand it. And it reframes things. It's saying, you know, no, this isn't about any of the stuff you allege it's about. This is trying to dispossess a people, and this is a talking point that you use. And for that, I like it. And for that, I think it is effective. And I see it. And the way that I've seen it over the years, I've been on the internet forever and been a racist for just as long. And man, I would just see it now. There would just be like some anti-white article, and people would just drop in the comments and leave and never come back. And that, man, it would seem to work. I'd see these random normies kind of replying to it, and some people, the person who dropped it would just, like I said, leave and never come back. And there'd be 40 comments after arguing about it, and people would jump in and be like, "Hey, yeah, this kind of makes sense." And for the period that we are living and being on the internet, just sometimes people dropping that in the comment and leaving is really helpful and interesting. And it's way better than trying to argue that you're not actually. It kind of steps over the whole thing and is saying, you know what, shit lib, I know what you're actually doing. Or, you know what, Jew, I know what you're actually up to. And I like it for that.
That's well said. Gaddius, what are your thoughts on the mantra in that response?
Yeah, I think No White Guilt gets a lot of credit in this area, because he has been saying the word anti-white over and over and over again for the longest time. And it, maybe, you know, everyone has their streamers that they like or whatever, but he's been out there basically pushing it out there day in, day out, anti-white this, anti-white that, and say what you want about the guy. He's been saying it forever. And we see it coming into the mainstream. We just had Charlie Kirk basically talking about the great replacement right after Tucker talked about the great replacement the other day, and the ADL attacked him. And Tucker's been saying anti-white. A lot of mainstream voices have been saying anti-white. So it's becoming more and more mainstream, to where everybody can pretty much use it without you know, being looked at sideways or people thinking you're hiding your power level or whatever. And I think it's a good thing. It's definitely probably the best argument. Anti-racism just means anti-white, because when they talk about, you know, nobody else can be racist except white people, right? Power plus prejudice equals, you know, racism or whatever. So only whites can be racist. And that's, by definition, it's anti-white. So...
Absolutely. Thomas, what are your thoughts on the mantra?
I think it's excellent, especially if you kind of ask, okay, so anti-racism is this categorical moral imperative. Racism must be destroyed. That's what society's operating under. Is total final victory possible for the libtards? And if so, what will it look like? And what would be the path to it? What would be the cost? The path will probably be a complete neutering of every single survival skill. Mass immigration, race mixing, end result will be probably destruction of everything we have. Everything has to go. So always my whole kind of like segueing out of that, one of my favorite strategies is give a libtard a cookie, ask what happens, what will be the next demand. So for this great crusade of the anti to smash racism, they're gonna smash everything. There's no brakes on this train. And it only goes one way against us. And at the end of the day, this is power, not justice. And two, going off of the whole thing where this only applies to white people, non-whites hate each other quite vehemently sometimes. If you look at the kind of the more rich Chinese, they absolutely hate blacks. Blacks hate them. We have this whole thing with the fake hate crime going on. And then the usually it's Chinese, by the way. They're kind of the ones who lead this. The other Asian subgroups don't really care. But rich Chinese they've studied how America works, and they're perfect at exploiting this. They understand that racism is anti-white. It's a great way to make money and get power. They'll play it all day long. They will disingenuously blame blacks beating up Asians who might be poor, not rich Chinese, on white people so that they get goodie points. And despite having wealth and power, they're now victims, and they can then demand affirmative action, even while they're colonizing the country, probably on behalf of the Chinese government. And two, I also went to a kind of like a very vibrant, enriched education experience in my younger years. And it was a low simmering race war between all the ethnic groups. It wasn't just anti-white. It was they all despise each other. And it just kind of like, you know, sometimes it would boil, sometimes it would cool off, but it seemed to always be there. And it kind of did dissipate after 9/11, but then it just came right back. So
let's go to the fifth argument. The fifth argument that Wedgwood's article talks about is cite race realist research on IQ and crime. There is a context in which that's definitely valuable. It really depends. Obviously, you don't want to cite it if people are trying to fire you from your job or run you out of a company or something like that. Run you out of academia, whatever, unless that's your field in academia and you do have to cite the research. But honestly, we've got to talk about the stats and the people who are dismissive of it. People who are dismissive of race realism. Oh, no, we can't talk about IQ and crime statistics. We've got to say something about the Roman Empire and wave our hands around or something. I just think that's bollocks, frankly. The argument against us, the accusation against white people, is that the reason why certain groups in our societies flourish and others suffer has to do with white ill will. White people are supreme, although we're not, and the colored people are suffering, although not all of them are. But the only reason for that is white ill will and white institutions that have to be dismantled. That is an argument that has to be responded to in terms of actual alternative explanations for why certain groups, black and brown people, fail so badly. And we can also bring in the fact that other non-white groups do extremely well in our society. East Asians, South Asians from the upper castes, they're the ones who end up over here. And Jews, people like that, they're outsiders who do fantastically well in our societies, whereas certain other groups do fantastically badly. They're massively overrepresented in slums and in prisons. And it just so happens that pretty much all of it correlates with IQ and sociopathic personality traits and things like that, impulsiveness, time preferences. And in fact, we don't have a white supremacist society. We have an IQ supremacist society when you get right down to it. That is the number one predictor of success, not whiteness, but intelligence. The number one predictor of criminality is not blackness per se, it's low IQ and high impulse, high impulsiveness, a lot of sociopathy and things like that. We have a criminal justice system that actually punishes people for being criminals, and we have an economic system that rewards people for being intelligent and industrious. It's not racist per se. So I do think there's a place for this research. We have to respond to the accusation lodged against us. And that accusation can only be responded to, the critical race theory accusation can only be responded to with an alternative hypothesis. And that alternative hypothesis has to do with human biological diversity. And that means looking at things like research, science, things connected with IQ, but other heritable traits as well. So, Rich, what are your thoughts on this? What are the contexts in which we do have to just talk about the stats and the data and the science?
I talk about it in more so kind of people who are already kind of have that they've come to the realization they don't like living around all these different races, and you know, they're looking for some justification or some explanation of how, you know, they might see something in college about blacks being X more times likely to be killed by police per capita. But then, you know, as I wrote in one article, where I said, okay, yeah, per capita, but if you look at per levels of criminality, then white people are actually getting killed by the police more. So there's people who are really interested in that kind of stuff. And I think it's good for them, and it's good to, you know, write that kind of stuff and explain that kind of stuff to these people, or else they're sort of just, they have this feeling that something isn't quite right, but they can't quite figure it out themselves. And it's really good to have these resources for them and put it out in an article, have it out there for them, you know, to access it. People contact me with stuff. Hey, you wrote about, you know, this thing one time, can you point me to the data or whatever? And I usually have it. And like, that's really important for people who are new to this. As far as like arguing with some liberal about it or a black person, or it's just never going to convince them, and it's a waste of time. Because if you say, well, you know, I think even if they accept your premise that there's IQ differences, they're going to be like, well, there's only IQ differences because you know, black people don't get access to nutrition because of colonization. It's just like, no matter what it is, it's still white people's fault, and white people need to fix it, right? So there's no, I don't see any point in arguing it with the liberals, really. Or if you know, you say, well, it's, I don't want to live around them because it's a lot of crime. So they only do crime because socioeconomic issues, and the socioeconomic issues are white people's fault, and on and on and on and on. You say, well, you can't say, I think that there being like no black fathers hurts them as a society. They'll just say, well, the reason there's no black fathers because they're all incarcerated in the war on drugs, which is racist. It just, you know, it's never ending. So for those people, it's useless. But for the people who are already, what I found is the people who already know something is kind of wrong, is kind of a glitch in the system, and are starting to poke around in these spheres, that stuff's really helpful, because it's not like this scary caricature of racism that maybe is portrayed sometimes. It's just like normal people looking at data sets and using those to explain real world phenomena. And that's really helpful to a lot of people that are kind of maybe more of the empiricist bent and whatnot. I'm not as much. And the statistics and all that stuff for me personally was sort of like an icing on the cake of like, okay, I already knew I didn't like him and didn't want to be around him. And I didn't need any study to show me that like certain groups of people were basically feral. Mm-hmm. I had come to that conclusion, you know, long time ago. But for some people, they do need that to maybe undo some of the conditioning and socialization. And I think for them, it's really important to have it and to have the resources for them and the people that can help point them to it. Right. So yeah, again, I don't think it's going to work for liberals. It wasn't my thing that, you know, made me, like I said, it was kind of after the fact for me, but there's a lot of people to where that's really important. They need to be able to have their views grounded in something. And it's probably like that for everything. Like there's people who, you know, research what washer and dryer they're going to buy for a year before they buy one. And like those kind of people probably need some hard evidence. So if they tell somebody, I don't like living around black people because I think they are violent and commit crime, they want a bunch of studies to be able to cite to that. Whereas for me personally, it was just, but yeah, this is what I believe and I don't care what you think, you know.
So Thomas, what are your thoughts on this? When do you start breaking out the IQ charts?
For me, I think this is best if you've already basically won or if you need to make a meme. I've noticed that facts and logic is weaker than pathos and personal experience. However, if you use pathos, personal experience, and facts and logic all at the same time, they synergize, and the sum is greater than the whole of its parts. I think a good example of this was that there was a meme going around showing the faces of all the mass shooters in America. It looked like a rap video. It was still black. There's like two like white meth heads, and there's dozens upon dozens of black shooters. So at that point, having a statistic and then illustrating it is good because then we take this abstract number to a reality and look at how, frankly, feral and ugly and vicious they look. And it's like, no, we're not picking on this nice little, the imaginary black science bro in sixth grade or whatever. No, we're responding to a very real, very vicious theme in another race. And it's not, I think it's good also because it shows that our race realism, it isn't skin deep. This isn't, oh, I don't like him because he has an afro. It's, no, this is psyche deep. This goes all the way to the essence of who they are. Very low impulse control, very vicious. And it comes down to numbers, not all, but here it is. Like, there's a reason for this. We're not irrational. We're not, quote, hateful people. They always try to say that we're hateful, like we're just angry at the world. And I'm like, no. I'm a myth. I've lost my country, but there's a rational basis for this. And in my opinion, the way I'm responding to it is very measured. And two, I think it's also useful for humiliating a liberal in an argument. For example, if they want to say that, okay, all these stats, it's only because of systematic racism or latent bias or whatever fairy tale. That's an a priori assumption that they have made in their head is cannot be abandoned. So you know what? Strap them into that roller coaster and make them ride it all the way to its logical conclusion. Okay, so this stat, that's because of systematic racism. So this one, this other horrible thing, how many rapes are committed across races, all these horrible things. Oh, it's only systematic racism. You sure about that, buddy? This. Oh, you're sure about it? And kind of make them say yes, 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 and make them look stupid.
Yeah, I'd echo Rich on this one. You can't really appeal to libtards on this one. They're a lost cause. They think, like, you know, men can be women and vice versa. But I think a good way you could shoehorn this in is if you're talking to conservatives or patriots or whatever about the Chinese menace, you know, the specter haunting everybody. The Chinese, they've scooped up James Watson, the co-discoverer of DNA. You know, they don't have the same you know, qualms about race and IQ that Americans do, right? So they don't care about that. They're actually brain draining us right now. You know, they got one of our Nobel laureates who got kicked out of, basically ran out of polite scientific society for stating observable facts. You just tell this to somebody you're talking to. Look, we've got different, you know, outcomes in IQ. They're on a whole different part of the bell curve than any other races. You could even use the Asians are smarter than us argument too. So this argument would probably work best on conservatives or right wingers that aren't really hip to the race question yet, in my opinion.
Yeah, some people get really steamed about Jared Taylor emphasizing that Asians do better in America than white people on average. And I think it's an absolutely important point to keep hammering home because it is a beautiful refutation of the idea that America is a white supremacist society. If white people have set up a white supremacist society in America, you have to conclude that we did a lousy job of it when Asians, East Asians, South Asians, Jews, and various other groups that are not us are at the top of the hierarchy. It's a beautiful refutation of that argument that we are a white supremacist society. No, we're not. We're an IQ supremacist society. If we're anything, we reward industry and intelligence in America, not whiteness. That's just simply the way the system is set up. Now, my attitude is I don't like that system. I don't want a race-neutral meritocracy. Absolutely not. I want a society where we're ruled by our own kind. We're ruled by people who have a biological and cultural kinship with us, who are connected with us. I don't want to be ruled by smart aliens. That's insanity. Being ruled by smart aliens basically means that you've signed your country over to people who regard you as, livestock that they can cleverly exploit. That's insanity. So the arguments based on IQ and other HBD, human biological diversity arguments, are absolutely important. There's really no getting around them, because they are beautiful ways of responding to some of the central claims lodged against us about systematic racism and white supremacy. It just doesn't survive. It doesn't survive a brief encounter with the bell curve. So I want to go back to the Wedgwood article here, because I do think there's some great writing in here. And he's critical of all of these arguments. And then he basically has his own view, his proposed alternative strategy. Now that I reviewed why the previous responses failed, let's move on to the proposed alternative strategy. To do that, let's return to our medieval witches for a moment. Ask yourself, how and why did witch hunts stop? Were the witches able to convince the church that they weren't really witches and that they haven't made a pact with the devil, or that their accusers were the real witches? No, there are no witch trials today because people no longer believe that witchcraft exists. The term carries no currency. Thus, if someone were to accuse you of practicing witchcraft, you would just laugh. You would certainly never try to defend yourself by saying that you go to church regularly and do not worship Satan. Yet this is precisely what most people do when the racist accusation is made today, especially mainstream conservative types. As soon as the accusation is leveled at them, they instinctively flinch, thinking that this is serious. They then put on a sad display of groveling, all the while not realizing that they have already lost the argument the moment they acknowledge that the racist term with a serious face. By pleading innocence or coming up with elaborate explanations for how they aren't racist, they are like a struggling insect caught in a spider's web. Each twisting of concepts, each intellectual contortion only gets them further entangled in the web and finally stuck in a position of utter submission. And then he links William Shockley, who is a very smart guy, but somewhat out there on the autism spectrum as well, arguing that he's not really a racist. And he treats the accusation with a very serious face, right? And Wedgwood writes, now imagine if he had been accused of witchcraft. Would he still have considered the matter seriously and given an answer with a straight face? So what to do instead? He says, never use this term in your conversations or writing unless you're using it ironically or to deconstruct and undermine the concept itself. All other uses for it are feeding the fire with oxygen. And basically, he just says, what we have to do is respond to the accusation by denying that it's meaningful. If directly confronted with the accusation, simply say that racism doesn't mean anything to you. The important thing is neither to admit nor deny it, but rather to reject the very concept itself. You can communicate this in any number of ways. For example, say there's no such thing as racism, or racism is too vague and doesn't mean much these days. And then without saying anything else, just carry on. Just go forward. Now, I think there's a lot of value to this. I think that there are contexts in which this is reasonable to do. My main argument against the idea that this is the magic bullet, though, the silver bullet, is this. Getting to the world where racism no longer has any currency is going to require making all of those arguments above in particular contexts. And, you know, there were actually people way back when who made arguments, careful legal arguments against witch trials and witch burning as well. And there was a reason why witchcraft lost its currency. Now, there, one thing we should mention, too, is that there really are witches. There really are crazy, evil, malevolent women who probably were engaged in abortion and poisoning and things like that. And there are still people like this to this day. So it's not even true to say that there were no witches. But for some reason, we've decided that they're not the biggest threat in the world. They're not the greatest evil in the world. It's not against the law anymore to be a witch, per se. And a lot of this was just by carefully dismantling the concept of witchcraft. It took a long time to get past these witch trials and things like that. It took some work. So what do you think? I want to go first to Gadius, to just responding, this is a meaningless concept. I don't even recognize it. The meanest thing in the world to say to somebody who comes at you is basically, you're nobody and nothing to me. Who are you? You're nobody and nothing to me. I don't even recognize you as an interlocutor, as an accuser. You're nothing. You're nobody to me. I sort of feel that way about, I don't know, the Matt Forneys of the world. You have the same attitude towards the concept. That concept is meaningless to me. Gadius, what do you think of that?
Yeah, well, that you just dismiss it out of hand. You say, nobody cares. Somebody goes, oh, you're a racist. Just nobody cares. Who cares? You know, like, because it's loaded. It's morally loaded because it's, you know, basically the modern term for heretic, right? You were talking about witchcraft or whatever. It's the modern term for heretic, but just dismissing it out of hand is, you know, just go, so what, you know, nobody cares. That's one way of going about it. And, that's probably, you know, one of the best ways to do it. The charge is meaningless. It's all, you know, you dismiss it as meaningless. It's always a good practice to do that, right? And a way you could move into the next phase is being like, okay, well, we shouldn't be around each other then. Like, we should be totally separated from each other. Can we agree on that? You know, that's probably where they'll want to put on the brakes there. Well, no, if we get rid of everybody who is racist in America, since, you know, America was founded on slavery and genocide and half the country's racist, you're not going to be in a very good position if we have to separate half the country, which is looking more and more like, you know, the best solution, you know. But that's definitely a good thing to do, is just, so what, who cares? Like, I don't even talk to me, because when somebody calls you a racist, they're basically being disrespectful. It's blatantly disrespectful. Everybody knows that being labeled a racist is, you know, the worst thing ever nowadays or whatever. So it, as far as I'm concerned, it's gloves off when they do that. Just, you know, give them the business, but you should always like try to be happy about it. Be like a happy warrior about it. Try to have fun with them, you know, like,
yeah. Just, don't act like you've been stung by the worst accusation ever, because that communicates that you think it's serious. You know, if you can laugh it off, right, or just regard it with contempt, that's much better than recoiling in anger, because then they know they've got you.
Yeah. So that's what I do. If somebody calls me a racist, I just say, so what? And it's usually, or it's interpersonal talking to people, because, I mean, you don't really get called a racist very often just by random strangers or whatever, unless you're,
right,
you know, unless you're at Arizona State University, like that one kid I saw on the video yesterday That was, man, I was facepalming watching that video. But there's a Libs of TikTok Twitter account, and they showed some kid sitting there in this black screeching SJW or whatever came up and was, because he had a police sticker on his laptop, and basically started giving him shit, and he had the worst response ever. He's like, no, I'm not a racist. It's actually apropos of what we're talking about here. Yeah. But if he would have just said, so what, leave me alone, that would have been, the best way to go about it.
In circumstances like that, if it's in public and somebody's attacking you verbally and they're agitated, the response that I've suggested to people, and a friend of mine actually did this with great success, is simply to speak loudly and calmly to the people around you and say, well, excuse me, will somebody please call the police? This person is harassing me. Will somebody please take out your phone and start filming this? This person is harassing me. That can be extremely effective because you framed it now. They hear somebody chimping, somebody getting agitated, and they see you calmly requesting help. You've already framed them as an attacker, as a criminal. You're calling the police, right? And if they're smart at all, they'll flee. We always, wait for the cell phone video to show up and the riots start again. Well, we can video them misbehaving too. And we can use that against them. When people come up to you and try and put you on film, it's like, oh, well, gee, I'm going to film you filming me. Oh, that really, really agitates them. The very idea that you can just whip it out and do it back to them, it doesn't even occur to them. These people are they're so brittle, and they have such a great level of entitlement that they don't even imagine that you can turn the tables on them, or you can do the same thing to them. So sometimes that's very effective.
In that situation, a good thing to do would just be to just be condescending to them. If they pull out their phone and they start recording you and accusing you of racism, you should really see it as a golden opportunity. Like, the best thing you could do in that situation is just talk down to them, be like, oh, how many likes do you think this is going to get? You're going to become real famous from this, aren't you? You're going to, like, everyone's going to love you now, because that's basically all they're doing is stunting for the gram, right? They're trying to get a viral
moment. They're so brave. This is so brave. Yeah, I love these people. They're preening, they're grandstanding, absolutely. And you point it out to them, you mock them for that. That's good instinct.
They're living in hyper reality. Like, when the phone comes out, you know that they're like more concerned with hyper reality than they are actual reality, because they're looking for likes or stunting for the gram or whatever. So I can't wait till the day some morbidly obese troglodyte tries to do that to me. It's going to be fun.
Oh yeah. Well, they're not very photogenic. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on this, Thomas? Just saying this is meaningless and dismissing it.
I think it's probably the best tactic for right now, because right now, its card has worked so well for them over the last few decades that it's the only thing they've invested in. Once you disarm them of that Trump card, they have very little else. They kind of go into blue screen of death mode, walk away, chimp out. And therefore, you kind of punish them for having put all their investment into racial politics, because they have never thought how else to argue. And they just end up looking very stupid. But too, I think another kind of way to use this argument is to ask, okay, well, why are you here? This is my pet peeve, is when I have these rich second or third generation immigrants come and get all uppity and start talking about racism. I think a good tactic here is to say, hey, if we were this racist, why did your parents come to our country decades ago when racism was allegedly far worse? And why are you still here? And were you given a scholarship to go to college where you can pontificate and be all huffy puffy about outrages that probably never even pertain to you? You have rich Chinese trying to basically appropriate all this bad stuff that happened to Chinese miners back in the 1800s, and they have no biological connection. They have maybe, yeah, they're both Chinese, but they're not descended from them. They're newcomers who are exploiting historical narratives. And it's like, yeah, if we're this bad, why do you want to live with us? We're so racist, you want to come to our neighborhoods and our countries, and only our neighborhoods and countries. Other countries don't let you in. Or if they do, they would not allow this whole uppity, bad-mouth your host country thing that Western countries allow. So I think that disarms it very well. However, I don't think it's going to ever make this the whole racism issue go away, because right now it's very incentivized to play the race card. It's a way for colored people to get power, wealth, position, advance themselves. So there's no rational basis for them to abandon it until basically we change the whole equation, which will require whites probably forming a group identity, which will probably require using the other tactics and talking to our own people.
That's well said. Rich, what are your thoughts on this?
I agree that we should bring back the witch trials. Is my main thought. And so, yeah, I think it is interesting. I like the idea of just kind of dismissing it. I mean, I personally just, people be like, you're racist. I don't care. You know, whatever. Like, you're calling me a racist isn't going to make me somehow think that we are all equal. I'm never going to think that a Somali and a German are equal. I'm never going to decide I want to give up my homeland and ancestral homelands of Europe because of, you know, racism. I just don't care. Even if it was real, I don't care. Like, I even go as far as there's been times where I've, you know, people, well, what, don't you think Jim Crow was racist? People have done that kind of stuff to me where, you know, after I've said, like, I don't think America's even racist, and even if it was, I don't care. And they would, what about Jim Crow? I said, that was just about protecting white women and children. I still don't care. Like, I just don't care. I'm picking my own people first. I'm taking my own side. I don't care. And that's generally, you know, I think a good approach and a good attitude with dealing with these people. Just, yeah, you call me whatever you want. Don't care. Stepping over it. I still want white homelands. I still want to be separated from these people. Don't have to justify it to you crazy people who don't know the difference between a man and a woman and think men can get pregnant and have periods too. Like, I don't care. You know, I don't have to justify to these lunatics. And that's kind of, and then on top of that, I tell them that we're bringing back the witch trials, and then they're really done for.
Yeah. I think that that's actually kind of an interesting meme. There really were witches, and they really were nasty people. Maybe they got a little out of hand about this, but maybe it should be against the law. Anyway.
I have an article coming up for that, by the way, for you.
Oh, excellent.
Remember I was telling you about the witch trials, how from that one account that was alleging they were essentially anti-Jewish pogroms?
Yeah, oh, great. There's
some really interesting research, and there's a kind of a body of literature where these Jewish people are basically saying they think a lot of the witch trials were ways to get rid of troublesome Jewish women. And I ordered a couple of the books and got a hold of a couple of the essays and from academic journals. I'm going to kind of talk about it and for a Halloween article.
Well, are they saying that the wicked witch with the big nose with the wart on it is a Jewish stereotype? If they want to own that, I mean, they can.
Yeah, no, that's what they're saying. They're saying that, like, the witch hat was like the pointy hat was kind of a thing Jewish women wore. And they're basically saying that in European literature, the witches were Jews and that they may have been troublesome. And they're kind of owning it in an interesting way that took me by surprise, and they were saying that the witch trials were disproportionately that they believed to be kind of leveled against Jewish women and who were causing what the Puritans believed would be trouble in the community, maybe sleeping with people's husbands.
Well, you know, there weren't that many Jews in large parts of Europe. I think it's great that they want to own this. Then they're going to demand reparations for the witch trials, right? That's hilarious. We live in a society right now where Antifa and blacks who destroy cities are not being charged. They're being let go. They're basically being pardoned. They're being amnestied. It's unofficial. We have people who are not being held responsible for the crimes that they're committing today. Why? Because of crimes allegedly committed hundreds of years ago by white people. And we're asked to accept the clown world, the morally inverted world, where because of crimes that were done hundreds of years ago, we should allow people to get away with crimes today. And my attitude is, and this is how I sort of parse the idea of stepping over it, as the way that Bowden talked about it. Slavery, I don't deny that it's a bad thing, but I've amnestied all these people. I have issued an absolute blanket amnesty and pardon to all the slave owners and slave traders of the past. We are going to forgive and forget. And just watch these people start steaming, because that's really the legal concept that applies here. And there are good reasons for amnesties. You know, at the end of a civil war or something, when you want to heal, basically where justice, pursuing justice for particular crimes would produce more injustice in the form of social unrest, then an amnesty is in order. I think we need to have an amnesty for all the Indian killers and all the slave owners and all the slave traders of the past. We're just going to forgive and forget, and we're not going to be held up, you know, to any kind of moral blackmail because of this as white people. That is a perfectly legitimate idea. The British government, after the Civil War and the Restoration, issued an act of amnesty and oblivion. They amnestied people for crimes committed during the Civil War and the Interregnum, aside from a few unforgivable crimes. And then they made it illegal. That was the amnesty. The indemnity part was the amnesty. The oblivion was making it illegal to talk about it. Why? Because talking about it could restart the Civil War. I think we should basically have not just an act of amnesty towards the past, but an act of oblivion. Criminalize the racial grievance industry. I'm sorry, you're trying to recreate a civil war. We're not going to allow that. You're trying to make cities burn. We're not going to allow that. This is shouting fire in a crowded theater. We're not going to allow that. I'm sorry. You can talk about anything you want, but you can't talk about that because you're up to no good. Watch these people's ears just start emitting clouds of steam. But that's the way to handle this in sort of a legal context. We've amnestied our ancestors. We're not going to be morally basically beaten up and bilked because of these crimes of the past. But we're going to go after every single Antifa and every single gangbanger and every single looter who has stolen some shoes. You know, we're going to bring the full force of law down upon them. We're going to punish recent crimes, and we're going to forget about ancient crimes. That is a perfectly legitimate legal framework for America today. I want to go over to Entropy. Folks, if you would like to help out and you'd like to send a question, comment, or donation, go to entropystream.live/countercurrents, all one word, hit the green button, and we will get to it. And we're now getting to it. Okay. So, and we've got quite a few now. So Archie has written in with $15. Thank you. I lived in China for almost a decade and felt a cultural freedom there that I cannot feel in Canada. In Canada, I must be on the highest diplomatic comport beyond just being polite. The stress of never being able to let your hair down is not good for the health. This is fascinating. There have been stories that I've told about Chinese graduate students coming to the United States and feeling that the United States, especially academia, is more of a repressive society than communist China. They're probably right. Archie writes in with $3. Meng Wanzhou is back in China, and the two Michaels are on their way to China. I'm not sure what that refers to. Gadius writes in with $30. Great guest this week. Well, yeah, thank you very much. RC, $100. Hope you make your goal. Thank you very much. Folks, by the way, we have a matching grant going on. So all of this is being doubled. And we have a little bit left over from a matching grant of $3,000, like $316. But we have, and I'm going to announce this next week, but you're getting a preview. We've got a $10,000 matching grant now. So go for it. It will be doubled. ABC gives $5. They don't understand why the alt-right is against the Iron Dome, thus agreeing with bitches like AOC and other anti-white haters. Israel is a nationalist state, even not white nationalist. I'm all for the Iron Dome. I just don't want to have to pay for it myself, especially when our borders are open on the south and our own country's being invaded. Jews are the richest, most powerful group of people on the planet. They can pay for their own goddamn Iron Dome. Exocet has written in with $10 and just says donation. Thank you very much. Some white guy, $3. Thank you. Please discuss replying to racist and racism with the meme curative. The words racist and racism are nothing but anti-white slurs, and as such, I reject them. That's basically, I think, in the same ballpark as anti-racism is anti-whiteness or systematic anti-whiteness, a code word for anti-white. And yes, we definitely agree with that. Another way that I like to respond to this is just to go on the attack. And I think we should talk about this, just going on the attack. And Gadius really went on the attack with somebody recently. It was quite memorable. Go on the attack. When somebody says you're a racist, simply say, why do you hate white people? Don't defend. Attack. Because the racist charge is an anti-white attack. It's only brought out against whites. And the question then is, why do you hate white people? Don't say, do you hate white people? Give them a loaded question. Why do you hate white people? Put them on the defensive. Put them in the spotlight. Put them on trial. That's what we have to do. We have to, and this is part of making that concept no longer have any currency. If it has no power over us and we can demonstrate that performatively, especially in front of an audience, and put them on trial. These people often think that they've got, the Trump card. They've got the silver bullet. They're invincible if they just say racist. And when you put them on trial, sometimes it's deeply disconcerting to them. So I think that's important. Gadius, tell us how you respond with an accusation, respond to an accusation with an accusation.
There's basically two, if you want to take like a bird's eye view of the political, bickering in America, there's two sets of people fighting against each other. One are the racists and the other are the pedophiles. So anytime I make it standard practice, anytime anybody online calls me a racist, I just say you're a pedophile, because it also has the virtue of being, as true as you want it to be, right? Because these people, they're more than likely they're down with LGBTQ, trans rights or whatever, trans kids. And, if you look at it, messing around with kids' genitalia, that's in the same ballpark as pedophilia, as far as I'm concerned. So I said this to a lady, it wasn't a lady, I don't know what it was, but last year I was just shit posting on New York Times or something on their Twitter. It's something about slavery, obviously, because that's all New York Times talks about. But I said, what can you say? Shit happens. I was basically saying, amnesty. We got to amnesty our ancestors. It's funny you were talking about that. And she said, oh, so you're a racist. Got it. And I said, you're a pedophile. And what she replied with was one of my favorite Twitter interactions of all time. She said, you don't even fucking know me. That's not something you just accuse someone of. And it was like she had no self-awareness whatsoever.
Absolutely. That's beautiful.
I would say it's unbelievable, but these people aren't, they don't think rationally or whatever. They don't even think about what they're talking about. And I screenshotted it and I'm going to keep that forever, because that's one of my all-time favorites of all time. So And that's what you got to do. Just tell them, hey, you're a fucking pedophile. Because, I mean, they're doing the same. Like I said earlier, it's blatantly disrespectful to call somebody a racist, even if they are, like, even if they don't care, like us, right? Because in, you know, in the modern dispensation or whatever, it's, you know, that's the worst thing you can be called. So
have you ever gone on the offensive, Thomas? How would you do that?
So I don't want to go into too specific, give it away, but I did go, I used my whole why are you in my country kind of line where I try to be phrased a little bit more politely, but my attack is always, okay, why are you here? Why do your parents come here? Why do you want to remain here? You're living it up here. For more in line with what he is talking about, I didn't do it myself, but I saw John Miller. He got into a spat with some black people on Twitter. And they were calling him a racist or Uncle Tom. And and one of the things that they said to him was, you wouldn't say that on the hood, would you? And so one of the things you can do, it's not just what you say, it's what you can trick the other side into saying. So they basically own themselves. It was so tone deaf. It's something like black and crime and violence. And then just admit, yeah, our neighborhoods are violent and we would probably beat you up or worse. So oftentimes make them overplay their hand. They're very emotional, and therefore, like children, they're kind of easy to manipulate.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
By the way, battery's kind of low, so I might drop out, but I'm going to see how long it lasts.
Okay. Well, we've got about 15 more minutes here. So hold on, I hope. But yeah, just saying, why do you hate white people? Put them on the spot, because a lot of them do hate white people. And it's great if you could trigger them into actually saying it. Yeah, I hate white people. I wish you were all fucking dead. Well, okay. Just smile and encourage them, because they're digging their own grave rhetorically at that point. If there's an audience and these people are going off about anti-white hatred and just being frank about it, that's victory for us. At a certain point, it's going to be just a standard talking point for everybody to acknowledge that all this racist, this talk about racism is just anti-whiteness. And why all the anti-whiteness? Because they hate white people. It's as simple as that. Rich, how do you go on the attack?
I'll be honest, I don't really a whole lot anymore. And I haven't for a while. I think it's because I've just been, like I said, on the internet and kind of in this sphere for so long. So normally if someone's like, you're a racist, I'll just post like one of those yes memes or Dragon Ball Z meme where they says you're a racist and they go to punch him and he catches the punch and says, I know. Yeah. Or I'll just be like, whatever, you're fat, don't care, post your physique, and like just something to basically some internet troll, because I just like, my style of it was more just the whole stepping over thing. Like, okay, you're a racist. Yeah, I guess so. Don't care. I know. That's mostly my MO for, and it's been that way for a long time.
Right. So Gaddius is back. Sorry about that. Continue with what you were saying.
I don't even know when I dropped out, but I was a little bit of a rant, but same thing. Just basically, here's another rejoinder you can say too. I read it somewhere. I don't know who said it, but it was a great reply. Somebody calls you a racist. Just say nothing you can ever say to me will ever make me value your opinion. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. You're nothing to me. You know, you're nobody and nothing to me. It's pretty brutal. It's very anti-democratic when you get right down to it. It's very anti-Christian. Yeah, you're not giving people even minimal consideration. But sometimes you just can't do that, especially if they're just some kind of rude cur who's hurling some insult at you. You know,
you don't
dignify them by doing that.
I think over exaggeration and hyperbole would work too. Like, if you say, yeah, I'm the fucking boogeyman, right? Like, oh, I'm so bad. Just tell them, like, I'm worse than Jeffrey Dahmer, because
I run the world.
At least Jeffrey Dahmer had the temerity to say, well, at least I wasn't racist about who I killed, you know, like that's something he actually said. So
just, at least I'm not a, I may be a pedophile, but I'm not a racist.
You just rub their noses in it. Like, oh man, it's the worst. I'm the boogeyman. You know, I'm evil. I'm Dr. Evil. But, like, just make them treat them like children is my opinion of it.
So back to entropy, Jasper has sent in $100. Thank you very much. That's now doubled. And he says, I just finished the Toward a New Nationalism. Well, thank you for reading my book. The article in Dov Bekhofer, the Orthodox Jew MD who was doxxed for supporting Amran and CC, was instructive. Could you comment on the aftermath of this experience if you're familiar? I wonder how his professional life was affected. I don't know the aftermath of that. He kind of went quiet. And I hope he's okay. Frankly, I liked the guy. I respected the guy. He had good comments. He didn't hide the fact he was an Orthodox Jew. This was a very, very interesting time. In 2015, 2016, when the alt-right thing was coalescing around Trump and he was going for the White House, I was living in New York City. And it was interesting encountering young Orthodox Jews who were totally plugged in to our memes. And I don't think they were trying to get one over on me or something like that. They were plugged into our memes, and they were angry about anti-white racism and stuff like that. I found that really fascinating. And their attitude about a lot of the alt-right was, finally, they're always think of themselves as a separate group. There's no question about it. But some of them actually liked the idea of white people sticking up for themselves, because they realize, and this is especially true of Orthodox Jews and especially true of ones in the greater New York area, because they're so, intertwined with non-whites economically and just living around them. And they know how dangerous they are. Right? They feel like their fate in America is tied to the fate of the white majority, even if they don't feel like they're part of it. There is some of that, definitely. And I was seeing signs of that. You can't dismiss that entirely. Do I have any insight? His follow-up, it continues. Do I have any insight on the status of support for white nationalism among Orthodox Jews? I've occasionally seen commentators from the tribe on countercurrents. Cultivating this paradoxical alliance can be very valuable. Well, look, the main way in which I want that quote unquote alliance to work is for Jews who are based and who think, and I've met Jews who've said this. I've met Jews who've said that there's one guy I met who said he was a self-boiled frog, that he started out with the Amran stuff, and then he sort of got into the Kevin McDonald stuff, and he came around to thinking that what's happening to white people in the world is the greatest crime in world history. Okay, I don't think he was lying to me. I think he's a sincere and good guy. People like that are valuable, and they're especially valuable, and they can show their value by working especially on their own people. You know, cool it with the anti-white hate. That's the kind of stuff I hope they can do. And I hope that's happening. I know it's happening to some extent. And I think that's very, very important, because the more people who are not fighting against us, who are either on our side or neutral, the sooner we win. And we win by having more people fighting for us and fewer people fighting against us. And that even includes members of the tribe. So I welcome any sign that their solidarity is splitting. Their racial solidarity, it's never going to split. They're never going to be atomized like white people. But their solidarity in their anti-white stance, I would like to see split. And I think that would make it easier for us to get what we want. So I think that's a good question. Let me just check and see if there are more comments here and questions at yeah, HAPA perspective, $3. I saw you in the stream and thank you for promoting this. Someday whites should treat the R word, racism, racist, the same way that blacks treat the N word. The reaction should be the same. There are two ways that we could treat it the same way as blacks. One is that we could treat it as fighting words. And whenever somebody uses it against us, just go off on them, because that is responding to the malice behind the concept, right? If you were to say, well, I mean, there's a legitimate sense of it, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you can do that. But when somebody is looking daggers at you and saying words that are meant to destroy you, it's a little autistic. You can, we could chimp, right? We could treat it as fighting words. But the other thing is we could own it too. We could call each other fellow racists. My fellow racists, right? We might even have a special pronunciation equivalent to nigga, right? For racist or something. I don't know, racist. We could figure it out. We could own it. And that's part of the process. That's one of the reactions, is to own it. The trouble with owning it is that right now it's massively freighted with negative connotations. However, we aren't going to win until those negative connotations are dispelled. And the way that we win, in part, is by acting like all those connotations have already been dispelled. That they just don't have any weight. They don't have any force against us anymore. Rich, what do you think about owning the R word, like blacks, be more specific, treating the R word like blacks treat the N word?
I was just thinking about it. Like, I would have a hard time. It would be really hard for me to do, because like the total chimp outs that they have, you know, when they hear somebody say the N word is just something like so foreign to me. Like, I'm almost never.
Hey, I've seen you chimp on Twitter a few times.
Yeah, I guess I have. I mean, I guess I have chimped on Twitter and on people, but it's just like, I don't know. It's just not a trigger. It would be hard for me to like develop that reaction, I think, for something that I genuinely don't care about. Like, if someone's like, you're racist, I'm like, okay, whatever. I mean, I just genuinely so don't care that I think it would be difficult. And I think a lot of white people would have a hard time kind of developing like a chimp out reaction to it.
Ginning up fake moral outrage is fake. And it's disgusting. You know, eventually we want to live in a world where that, being aggrieved no longer is the key to the kingdom, right? It's no longer the coin of the realm. And maybe the best way to do that is not to pretend like we're poor, oppressed white people, you know, but just sort of laugh it off. I mean,
yeah, I guess that's more my reaction to it. And I think saying that you're really offended by it maybe gives it more power, and they just, I don't know. It just, maybe it's a strategy some people could use. It feels foreign to me, I guess, saying like, I'm so offended you called me a racist, because when my general reaction is like, I guess I am, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, if you at racism, where is thy sting? That should be our attitude, rather than go recoiling and say, again, that's taking it too seriously. But I do think the other thing that blacks do with the N word, owning it, that's kind of a lordly thing that we could do.
I think that strain of it would make more sense, of just everyone calling each other racist in like a good way. Like, that's my buddy. That's my buddy Gaddius. He's racist too, like me. Like, you know, it's a cool thing. It's a good thing. That would take some of the power away, I think.
I don't know the provenance of it. You know, I don't want to give him the satisfaction. Trotsky, right? He's supposedly the legend is he created the term for, you know, racist or whatever. So I don't know. It is appealing though. Like, hey, this is my racist buddy. And actually actually have said that before. I'm going to go meet up with my race buddies. So yeah. Actually it does work, but it'd be graining a lot of ceding a lot of linguistic ground to Leon Trotsky, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, sticks and stones. But we have to get to the point where that name just doesn't hurt us anymore, right? And where we can wear it as a badge of honor, and then we'll win. But part of the ways that one of the ways that you win is to act like you've already won. I mean, it's just true. It's to perform what it's like to live without that accusation mattering anymore. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean anything. It's not going to hurt me. You're not going to deflect me from taking care of my own and taking care of my own side and having a future. We're not going to be cheated and blackmailed and wheedled out of a future for our race with this stupid word. It is the most evil thing in the world, what's happening to white people. And racism is treating racism and only racism for white people, of course, as the worst thing in the world is basically how we're being genocided. It's how we're losing our future. It's understandable if people want to react to it with great anger, but it's probably better to play it very, very cool and to treat it like it's just a meaningless, impotent phrase, because then it becomes a meaningless, impotent phrase. That's how we have to do it. I do think that the big question then, and this maybe is the thing for our next argument clinic or our next sort of round table brain trust thing. And I'm afraid we lost Thomas. His phone tapped out basically, but he'll be back because he's a valued contributor. He'll be back next week, maybe for another one of these sessions where we figure out how to make this more viral. Right? How do we get more people dismissing the racism charge, laughing it off, whatever? I think the best way to do it is to have great examples of people doing it well. You know, that's how we learn. We imitate. We do imitate. And we can also, you know, hold up memes, basically. Make memes go viral with, you know, basically the yes meme. Or variants of the yes meme. I think that those are all great ways of handling it. What do you think, Rich?
Yeah, I like that and agree with everything you guys have been saying.
I think conduct yourself in a manner where people want to, you know, emulate you. Like if somebody's, oh, that guy's a racist, but he's like, you know,
normal, successful.
He's got his shit together. Then, hey, maybe there's something to this racism thing. Maybe I want to be a racist. So, you know, that's probably the best thing to do. Just set a good example.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that I wrote about years and years ago before I even founded Countercurrents was a book by a guy named Douglas Hyde called, it's on leadership. I can't even think of the name of it now. It's on Countercurrents. Just search for Hyde, Hyde. Not Sam Hyde, Douglas Hyde. It's called Dedication and Leadership. And it was about the tricks that communists use to organize. And one of the things in there that really surprised me was he argued that members of the Communist Party, and this is, of course, in the West, were ordered to be exemplary people because they realized that people will follow communism, not just based on ideas, but based on people that they admired. And so it was never an excuse for them that you were so dedicated to the party and the cause that you were neglecting your family or being a bad worker or being a drunk or something like that, being a bad neighbor. And I think that, you know, whether it was true that the communists did this or not, it's definitely something that we should always keep in mind for two reasons. One is that, yes, exemplary people are very persuasive. And two, It also deprives people of one of the biggest excuses for burning out and being a loser, which is, you know, the beautiful loser kinds of arguments. I'm so dedicated to speaking the truth and speaking in, you know, the cause, et cetera, that I just don't have time for all this other stuff. Well, you've got to take time for that because the cause requires you to be excellent all around. Self-improvement is a very, very important thing for any movement that especially is marginalized but wants to lead. We have to make ourselves better people and lead by example as much as possible. So guys, we basically run out of time. I like this format. I want to do more argument clinics. And I think next week I'm going to try and organize one about the charge of being a hater. Because we had a really good article recently at Countercurrents about the hate charge. And I think it's always worth revisiting that particular charge too. So I want to thank everybody. I want to thank Rich. I want to thank Thomas, who's no longer with us, but I'm sure he's listening in. I want to thank Gadius, of course, all the people who are moderating, the people who've donated, and the people who are listening. This has been a really, I think, a productive show. I think this is going to be a classic. I think this is going to get shared a lot because it's really practical. So thank you very much, guys. And we will be back next Saturday for another episode of Countercurrents Radio. Tomorrow, starting at 1 p.m. Pacific time, 4 o'clock Eastern time, we're going to have on this very channel, The Writer's Block with Nick Gilvey, and his special guest will be F. Roger Devlin, talking about his seminal work, Sexual Utopian Power. So tune in tomorrow for The Writer's Block, and tune in a week from today for more Countercurrents Radio. Thank you.
Thanks. See ya.
See you later.